Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders Fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper, and I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Mary Rowland. I'm your hostess for the evening, and I hope that all of you will visit the great folks at www.patriotfamilies.com who are responsible for persuading me to come on the air here every Thursday night and give you my views about where our public education system is headed and what we can do to redirect it toward positive goals. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is the group is the ideal. This is the philosophy that has come down to us from the almighty Mr. Dewey, who revamped public education in the 1930s based on his love affair with Soviet schools. Yes, you heard me correctly, Soviet schools. Mr. Dewey believed that in order to learn anything, you're supposed to do hands-on, and the most important thing you can do in a public education system is socialize the students to become quiet, well-behaved, integrated members of the group. Mr. Dewey believed that the group, the integrity of the group, the solidity and safety of all, should be the prime goal for teaching children. The idea that you had a child separate from the group and talk about current events was not so that that child could feel comfortable speaking in public. It was so that he would be nervous enough to want to return to the security of the group as fast as possible. The understanding that this nation was founded by people who were out as much the antithesis of groupthink, as you can imagine, passed by Mr. Dewey. Individuality, individual liberty with individual responsibility, has been the hallmark of the United States of America since its inception. Our founding fathers and the people who came before them to create the colonies from which our nation sprang left their homelands because they did not want to be grouped into whatever group happened to be running the place they came from. They had restless feet. They did not settle for the status quo. They wanted that over the hill, far horizon chance for freedom. The desire to leave behind a home that wasn't a home and make a brand new one in a wilderness or among people who didn't speak the same language as you did in later years took courage and individual spirit. Our public education system has been following Dewey's group infatuation for about 80 years now. And if you have looked at our position in the world, as far as our mastery of our own language, mathematics, science, etc., we have been deteriorating for a good portion of that time. Part of the reason is because of the almighty dollar. School systems are funded both by federal and state taxpayer money. The creation of the Department of Education by Jimmy Carter helped accelerate the dependence of public schools upon federal money and federal approval. The adoption of the 17th Amendment that watered down the power of states to send representatives to the Senate as representatives of their state rather than a political party help to accelerate it even further. Our kids are being taught along the groupthink lines of Dewey and Soviet education. The idea that all children can be molded into productive, silent, obedient citizens if you just catch them early enough comes directly from the Soviet Union and was the hallmark of their schooling. I had a pen pal for a while back in the 1990s when Glasnost was first introduced, who was a teacher in the Soviet schools. She hated her job. She hated her job because she was not permitted to teach truth. She hated it because what the kids learned to do best was cheat, because nothing was of value to them except rank and position within the group. We need individuals and groups to make a society work, ladies and gentlemen. We are, as human beings, gregarious creatures. We join together in groups for self-protection, for commonality of interest, to make numbers felt in the political process. There are many good reasons to join a group. But to be forced into one because it is safer and more politically correct is an abomination. And unfortunately, the philosophy of the public education system today is doing that kind of forcing. Individuals are a huge danger to the Marxist socialist idea of the utopian society. Individualists don't easily sit down, shut up, and accept government's authority. Individualists do not participate in groupthink. They have a tendency to go off on a wild tear of imagination, creativity, and innovation. And they do things like produce workable electricity or atomic power or the telegraph or the phonograph. Or a lot of other really, really dangerous things that give people more ability to communicate, travel, and explore this world and this universe in which we live. Under the current educational philosophy, the teacher is held accountable not for teaching the material the students need to know, but for the pass-fail rate of her students. Or his students, as the case may be. teachers in universities are told by their professors that if all of the students in their classes do not pass, then it is the teacher's fault, and they are doing something wrong. Because obviously, all children can learn at the same pace. But of course, the Department of Education also says that they can't. So they have to be taught and accommodated to suit their particular skills and abilities, or lack thereof. Yet they also, according to the Common Core curriculum, which has been slipped through the cracks of the Department of Education, and states are being browbeaten to accept, they should all achieve certain levels of skill in core subjects in chronological order. In other words, every first grader should be able to read at the same level when they complete first grade. But every first grader should also be taught at the pace that that individual first grader can best understand. So if you have a child who is, in the euphemistic terms, slow, he or she is not going to be able to differentiate between the words cat and dog by the end of the year, but that's okay because he'll feel bad if he doesn't get past the second grade. We have an oxymoronic situation in public education. We have a group which says all children are the same and need to learn things in the same way and at the same pace and achieve at the same degree of facility based on their chronological age. And we also have the individual think that each and every one of us is a valuable individual and we can't possibly be allowed to fail because our self-esteem will be destroyed utterly by the time we're 8 years old. You can't do both. You can't have creativity and innovation and groupthink at the same time. You can't measure the abilities of all children against a yardstick and blame the teacher if children's abilities don't measure up across the board. You can't create utopia by socializing kids in first through 12th grade so that they nod eagerly whenever government tells them to sit down and produce a bowel movement, just because that's the politically correct and groupthink thing to do. When we teach our kids that their loyalty should be to a group rather than to individuals or ideals, we turn them into the SEIU crew on the purple bus. The only thing that matters is being part of the accepted group. Very few innovations, inventions, or acts of progress in this world were created by committees, ladies and gentlemen. Committees don't make things except noise. Groups generally don't achieve much unless they have leaders. And leaders don't come from quick, be just like everybody else in the group. You can't have groupthink and functioning groups that get anything done without individuality and leadership qualities. This is the basic reason why the vast majority of Marxist-socialist experiments have failed and failed miserably. There are going to be leaders, beloved leaders like Kim Jong-il and his son, or fearless leaders like in the old Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons, who basically was the Scarface master of Britain. Or evil, thuggish leaders like Saddam Hussein, or idealistic leaders like Mao Zedong, who murdered millions of people in re-education camps, particularly those who were well-educated and intellectual because they were a danger to the honest tiller of the soil and his ability to maintain power, which, of course, he never had to begin with. All the power rested in the hands of Mao and his gang. Groupthink and group orientation do nothing to promote progress. It's one of the reasons why the term progressive always irks me. Over and above that, I can't stand their philosophy. Their application is the opposite of progress. Their view of progress is Al Sharpton's equal stuff in everybody's house. Well, the only way you're going to get that is if everybody lives in a dormitory, in a cubicle, and has exactly two pairs of pants, two shirts, two plates, two cups, two knives, two forks, two spoons, and two pieces of food for every meal. That is the equal stuff in everybody's house that Mr. Sharpton is promoting. It's not everybody has what George Soros has, or everybody has what the Principality of Monaco's rulers have, because you can't do that. It's not possible. The only way you can do that is if some people have it all and they dole it out in small increments to everybody else. As my friend Wally said, that's what they want the slaves to do, and that's pretty much it. Groupthink and the integrity of the group and the loyalty to the group being promoted as the ideal for our kids not only disgusts me, it terrifies me. I am not a, I guess you could say, hermit or iconoclast or misanthrope. I like people. I enjoy being around people, but not 24 hours a day, and I certainly don't look to groups to tell me what to think, what to believe, or how to behave. My loyalties are not directed toward any group. My loyalties are directed toward people, my friends, my family, leaders whom I can respect, who have personal integrity and have a vision that I can believe in. I'm loyal to my seven kitty cats. I'm loyal to my neighbors. Not because it's the group thing to do, but because we need to help one another in this world. And if I'm asked for help, I try to give it generously and ungrudgingly. I am not anti-Boy Scouts or anti-dance lessons or anti-4-H or anti-Little League or any of those things. Like my friend Wally said, his loyalty is to the U.S. Constitution, not the leaders. And I agree. A leader who would give loyalty would be one who has the same loyalty to the Constitution that I do. Loyalty should be directed toward people and ideals, not groups. When you have group loyalty, you have the SEIU bus full of people who have no clue about anything except, oh, well, this is a button I'm supposed to push because my union leaders told me that if I don't, we won't have all the nice stuff that we've got now. We have to stop the deterioration of public education, ladies and gentlemen. We can do it. We are doing it. Look at the proliferation of homeschooling parents, the implementation of voucher systems in many states so that parents get a chance to choose teachers. Last week on this program, I talked about our current president's executive order requiring schools to recruit African-American teachers, administrators, and staff and to track supposed unequal application of discipline to African American students. This is just about to drive me crazy. It sounds like apartheid. It literally sounds like apartheid. Are we going to go back to the idea that the only person who can teach a white child is a white teacher, and the only person who can teach a black child is a black teacher? What in the name of God has happened to a nation that made huge changes because of a man who said he dreamed that one day a man would be judged by the content of his character and not the color of his skin? What have we done to ourselves, ladies and gentlemen? What have we allowed to be done to us by those we choose to make and enforce our laws? We have to fight the juggernaut of big government in all areas. The Agenda 21 believers who want private property to be null and void, who take the "it takes a village" mentality and want every single one of us in little teeny tiny well-controlled government-supplied enclaves so we are easier to control. My friend Wally said that collectively we have and are still to a degree blind, and he's right. Many of us are. Many people want to remain blind because it's too scary to take off the blinkers and see what's going on around us. But I believe with all my heart that the blinkers are coming off. I believe that folks like those of us in Patriot Family and a lot of other conservative groups, Freedom Works and Tea Party Nation, and commentators like Limbaugh and Beck and Hannity, news organs like Fox, bloggers and writers like Lloyd Marcus, politicians like Adam West, I believe that things can and will change, and the process of change has begun. Not the fake change that was a catchword for a totally unprepared candidate for the presidency, but real change. Change for the better. Instead of just change it any way we can because we don't like what it is. I've got a caller on the line, and I'm guessing it's my friend Linda. Let's see if it is. Hello there.
Can you hear me?
Sugar. Yes, ma'am.
I'm listening because I'm in my car and I'm meeting a friend, and it's a long story, but she's fed up with the system, but she doesn't understand it. So, you know, I try to enlighten her, but to no avail. You know, it's funny, when I finished reading that book, which was fantastic, by the way, I would recommend it to anyone, The Seven Tipping Points.
I'm glad you enjoyed it, Linda.
And the Battle of Britain was absolutely astounding. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm so grateful that Mr. Beck made reading history sexy again, because I have learned so much, girl, I can't even tell you.
And isn't it wonderful?
It's fabulous. If you would have told me at the age of 15 that I would be doing this, I would have thought you were from Mars, absolutely from Mars. And yes, and because you know how they made it so boring on purpose so that we wouldn't.
Exactly.
And you see the results. And, you know, I was mentioning earlier about the speech that Obama gave earlier to a crowd of cheering lemmings that he wants. So the radio talk show host dubbed him Il Duce.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely, because he wants to nationalize every industry in this United States the way he did with GM, which is now China Motors, by the way. Isn't that special?
Yeah.
I will say that... things did not end up well for Mussolini, as we recall. What I've discovered is that because of Christianity and because of our 235 and plus years, let's say, even from the Pilgrims' times, that people are, in our civil body politic as we are today are inherently good people. They don't want to go running around murdering their neighbors, et cetera, like, you know, Genghis Khan, that it's very hard for them to have their minds wrap around what evil does is wanting to befall them by these evil ones, such as the banksters and or the Agenda 21 crowd. They cannot accept it because their minds and hearts can't, you know what I mean? They can't go there.
Exactly.
And I think that's why.
We are the most charitable nation on earth, Linda. We're the most giving nation. Where anybody's in trouble, the first ones there with dollars and with boats, with machinery, is the U.S. We're always right there. We have always, as a nation, understood the principle that if you don't help your neighbor when he needs you, he's going to help you when you need him. And
right.
That is part and parcel of the Judeo-Christian idea that
right.
That little children love one another, care for each other, not because
right.
somebody makes you or they take it out of your paycheck, but
right.
you yourself doing something as an individual. Christianity
right.
is an individualistic religion. And as such, because most of our founding fathers were practicing Christians in one way or another,
right.
and because
right.
most of the people who started this nation came here from countries that did practice Christianity, that ethos, that belief of individual salvation, help
sure.
your neighbor because it is right to do as an individual, underlies just about every law we've ever made, just about every alliance we've ever had. We get up on our hind legs and fight when anybody who wants to make a totalitarian mess of this world gets in gear, and we stop them. The resurgence of the individual, the belief that individuality and individual freedom and individual responsibility will, in the end, conquer. That's what we're built on. That's why this whole groupthink, politically correct,
right.
anti-bullying,
and,
kumbaya crap is
and
so
the other thing,
ridiculous.
Yeah. And it's evil. And the problem is that people do not recognize, unless they've come from a place like old Soviet, how
mm-hmm.
fleeting and fragile freedom is. And how
yes.
quickly it can go back to the dark ages. And this is what people need to know. And this is why I do what I do. I mean,
I understand, hon. And as I've said before, you are my hero, one of many heroes out there on the ground. And I can't do what you do. I don't have the energy or the strength to. So I do this, you know? So this is my way of contributing. Plus, teach. And one of the
mm-hmm.
things that I like best to teach is history. And I'll give you a little heartwarm here, Linda. I was substituting in a history class a couple of years ago because the teacher was out and I was available. They
right.
told me to do that. But I was talking to a seventh grade class, and they were on the settlement of the Great Plains. So I decided I'd get them to start thinking. And I described what the settlers had to leave behind. They were going out somewhere where they weren't going to be able to talk to their friends anymore, the kids. They couldn't go to regular school. They didn't have a store nearby where they could go get a new pair of overalls. And I asked everyone in the class, one by one, to tell me if they had to do that, what would they miss most? They got enthused. They got interested. And at the end of the class, one of the kids asked me, "How come you know so much about that time, Ms. Roland? You weren't alive then, were you?"
Oh, God.
I said, "No, but I read about it. I learned about it in school." But
right.
that's how, when you have the opportunity to teach kids that history is
right.
about human beings and not just states and kings
right.
and boundary lines and wars and battles and laws,
mm-hmm.
but about people. That's one of the reasons why history was one of my favorite subjects, because I could always, in effect, imagine if I lived in
right,
Rome
right.
in 40 AD, what would my life be like? What would I do each day? What would I see
right.
when I got up in the morning? And when I teach, I bring that view to whatever period I'm talking about. And
right.
the kids lap it up because it
yep.
becomes real.
It comes real, and what you do when you're the person reading the story is what your mind does is transports you to that time, to that.
Exactly.
It's like you've gone there by some magical force.
And
it's fabulous.
So many of our kids, because of this idiotic social promotion, don't damage anybody's self-esteem. they can't and won't read anything. They read words, but the sense of what they read doesn't come through to them. It's as if they were reciting Spanish simply because they know how to pronounce each word, but they have no clue what the words mean. I don't ask anybody to read Spanish out loud without knowing what any single word means. It's a very simple language phonetically. Mm-hmm. The kids that I see and work with who have been socially promoted when they can't read, they get to seventh grade. It's horrifying. But it's that groupthink again. It's that Dewey idea that we've got to make them feel good about themselves so they'll be happy little clones under a benevolent government that won't allow them to fail, that'll make sure that they have just as much as the guy who has an IQ of 185. It's an oxymoron is the only way I describe it.
It's just nonsense,
It's a total junction of opposites that cannot coexist in the same space and time. And, basic physics, two objects can't occupy the same space at exactly the identical moment. But doggone it, the federal government is going to make public education teach kids that they can.
Right.
That they can.
And that's why yesterday I started my show with Jefferson Airplane's White Rabbit, and when we go chasing rabbits, and you're going to fall, that one, because we're in that upside-down world of the progressives. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. Whatever you call them, fascists,
fascists, socialists, Marxists, it's the whole philosophical bent that says, government can redesign humanity if we just give up every choice we have and let them go at it. That's the basic underlying truth that nobody wants to express about the progressive utopia. You can't have it unless you totally give up any control over your personal decisions. The only way that you can ensure a society that has no crime, no poverty, no war, no bad stuff at all, is to basically make everybody totally afraid to do anything until
because everything will be illegal and you'll be terrified. What they want. That's what the evil ones want.
I don't know whether you ever watched any of the Star Trek series. Next Generation is one. An episode on that series comes to mind. The ship visited a planet where any infraction of the rules of society had the death penalty. And the young son of the ship's surgeon was playing ball with some of the youngsters on this planet. And he went back to try to catch the ball and stumbled into a flower bed. He was sentenced to death because you weren't allowed to step in the flower beds. And it was what kept their society crime-free and peaceful and kind and loving. And that basically is what the progressive utopia would have to be. You can't, aside from mass frontal lobotomies, you're not going to get it with people. You can't get it.
Exactly. And if they call that utopia, I just call it, Hades.
Hell.
That's what it is.
Because unfortunately, there are too many people who don't enjoy thinking. They want to avoid it at all costs because it requires effort and because you have to make decisions about what's right and wrong. Many people don't want to take the responsibility for the kind of a decision. And that is a kind of built-in safeguard in a way, even though it creates major problems politically. When we are aware of the amount of responsibility that a personal choice entails, we're going to hopefully think a little bit more before we jump at something. But to carry it to dangerous extremes is to avoid taking personal responsibility for anything for fear you're going to be wrong. What you get then is a happy little mushroom sitting off in the woods somewhere, happily dropping spores and rotting away into the leaf mold. And that is, we are not fungi. As much as the progressives would like to turn us into fungi, we aren't, and we never will be. A little lower than the age of little and a little higher than the beast and capable of great evil and great good. We are not gods. We never will be gods. We will never be a species that is ant-like. We think, we feel, we conceive, we build, we use tools. We want something more than we had yesterday. And those qualities lead us to both great achievement and great hope. And it's the nature of human beings. The founding fathers understood that. We weren't stupid men. They were brilliant. They created a form of government that understood the reality inherent in human beings, as well as their potential for good. And that experiment has been a resounding success. Now the progressives are trying to make it totally irrelevant. It's old-fashioned. You know, the Constitution is a living document. Oh, yeah, right. In their mind, a living document means we can tinker with it as if it were an Indy car, and we can replace the cams and adjust this and so forth. Just to make it go faster. Yeah. No, the Constitution is a document that was intended to create a government that did not trample individual rights while protecting the rights of society. And it did a brilliant job. And if they would just follow it, it would continue to do a brilliant job.
Agreed. And they won't. I know. That's why we're fighting.
I know it. And that's why we're getting head up and passionate and, you know, doing radio shows and going to meetings and getting the microphone and telling people about Agenda 21, like my favorite California conservative does. We have to raise our voices. I would rather we raise our voices than raise a cudgel or a weapon. Our voice, our belief in what this country has been and can still be and can go on to be, is the best quote-unquote weapon that we have. One of the reasons why, although I really, really dislike the garbage that I'm seeing in the political ads, one of the reasons that I haven't gone off and shot myself is that once I get over being disgusted, I recognize without a forum to spew this stuff, it would all be underground, sneaking around cockroaches in the wall, and only come out when we weren't looking to discuss more.
Mm-hmm.
If you try to suppress dissent, it becomes resentment, and it becomes violent, and it becomes revolutionary in a not positive way.
Right.
So many Europeans and people from other countries are aghast at what we allow people to say in public in this nation, or what we used to allow people to say. Now political correctness is putting brakes on that, and the ACLU. But the idea that people should just stand up and criticize the government, my God, you know, how can you all get anywhere? Well, it's managed to work for us for a little over 200 years. And the founding fathers understood as well that if you suppress dissent, you are going to, as I said, create resentment and anger and violence, and you are not going to have the chance to notice that if dissent has a good idea, you might be able to put it into practice and make things better for everybody.
Right, and the problem with these utopian clowns and these New World Order nut jobs and the Agenda 21 crowd, et cetera, is that they keep trying to do, actually undo what God has placed inside of us, and that is free will. And, you know, that's even, I'm sure back 4,000 years ago, people, even though they were slaves and being beaten and, you know, didn't stand much chance to live beyond 30, knew that something was wrong, but didn't dare peep a word out of it, you know,
but
out of their mouth.
I'll bet you, Linda, even those slaves, browbeaten and downtrodden as they were, hauling bricks to build Pharaoh's tomb, I'm sure they slipped around the back of the overseer every once in a while for a drink of water when they weren't supposed to get one.
They wouldn't have made it to 30.
That's right. There were the ones who manipulated and maneuvered and took the chance and were successful at it. When you eliminate risk, which is another one of the groupthink progressive deals, the idea that we can have a risk-free life, which is the biggest lie I've ever heard in my life, you know, it comes from our president continually. The only risk-free life I can think of is being comatose in a mental institution.
And or catatonic, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, believe me, catatonia and coma are not my idea of a fun way to live.
like the mushroom.
Yeah, they're not terribly productive either. The pathetic, I guess you could say sheeple, because it's a good term, yes, who follow the do what I say is best for you and I'll give you all this neat stuff, are so character poor and hope poor and so inculcated into the victim mentality that, mm-hmm, bless their poor little hearts, they can't think. The only thing that matters is the next handout. I have a friend, an elderly lady, who lives in public housing. And she is a conservative. And believe me, she is not the rich, the middle-aged, white CEO of a major corporation that most liberals have of conservatives. She is poor as dirt. And, you know, she's also reasonably bright in many ways. And it drives her crazy to live among so many people whose major goal in life is to seek out some other group to give them something for free. That's what they do. That's their whole lives are about go from this church to this hostel to this food bank to this to get the free stuff. This is what we do. This is how we live. This is what we're entitled to. One of the reasons that I admire Lloyd Marcus so much, the Black Tea Party activist, he doesn't allow that garbage to get in his way at all. He says it like it is. He isn't a victim, and he's damn well not going to let anybody call him one.
Precisely. I know. There's too many who have never left the plantation, and including us if we go with the monetary system. But you know what I mean? And they have been brainwashed. And the things that I heard from a couple of them, well, one of them on Sean Hannity's show earlier today, was this guy has obviously been so thoroughly indoctrinated and has never read real history. When you go back to, let's say, 1900s or even the late 1800s, and how the Democrat Party has been the ones, not the Republicans back, especially in that era, who were the ones oppressing blacks. And they apparently have never even thought to even find out this history or find it in their books. And again, opening up a book, my God, you would think it was laced with hemlock the way they treat it.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, you know, it's typical of, as I said before on this show, when you tell a child from birth that he or she is a born victim, that he or she is never going to be successful in the world because evil people are going to do everything they can to put stumbling blocks in his way, then you condemn that child to failure for the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm. And slavery.
Any decent parent, any caring parent, anyone who loves their child and wants for their child the best that he or she can achieve would cut their tongue out before they taught their child that. When you spend your time gnawing old bones in the dark and feeling put upon and resentful for what happened 200 years ago or 100 years ago.
Yeah, they're still talking about it.
I know. And anybody would think, that by now, with the changes in attitude, that idiot woman in the Virginia House, who the truth team, Obama's truth team woman, who was rejoicing that she finally convinced her children that racism exists? Well,
oh my God.
Apparently their experiences didn't indicate to them that it did.
It's
so she
amazing.
Has to go out of her way to convince them that it does?
Good Lord.
What does that tell you about her perception of reality? If you've got to try to convince your kids, okay, that there are racists out there who are after them. Well,
you know, and to follow their logic to its conclusion, up to this day, then every black person would be in shackles.
Exactly.
I mean, it's illogical. It's nuts. I don't get it. I mean, look at all the, not that I admire many of them except Alan West, but look at some mm-hmm. of these congressmen who are of color. They're mm-hmm. not, you know, oppressed. They're making damn good money. They've made it.
Of course
it.
They are.
So, you know, they're not working a plantation. What I,
nope.
are these people? I guess reality just doesn't work well for some people. It's sad.
No, because reality would undercut their power, and that's it. You can't be a spokesman for victims if you haven't got any victims to be a spokesman for. You can't have
yeah.
prominence and the stage and the forum and the podium to berate the United States for how horribly they treat people if you don't have a bunch of people who are convinced they are being treated horribly. There just isn't anybody to want to hear you talk. And they know this. Neither Sharpton nor Jackson is as stupid as they would like to appear for their power base.
Right, right.
They're both
well,
very
they're,
bright
you know,
men.
And they call themselves reverends. Well, they're hiding behind a black robe, okay? God's going to
yes.
hold them even more accountable, believe me, for doing that. Because they're just blasphemers in my, you know. And I don't think he likes that too much. But I'll leave it up to him. He's the final, that's the final word.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll deal with them a lot better than I can for a lot longer time. But.
And it's, well, one of the reasons that I get a little concerned when I hear people talking about, particularly the Christian right, that we need to bring God back into everything. And believe me, I believe in God. But my question always is, who's God? Because if you walk into any Christian church of any denomination and you pull 10 people aside and tell them to describe God, you're going to get 10 different descriptions.
Right. But what
matters...
But, when they say we in God we trust, they weren't
uh-huh.
talking about one specific religion and making
no,
that
they
a national.
Weren't.
No,
and that is why our form of religious freedom has worked so well, and why we are so blind to theocracy. We don't understand it because it is totally
right.
outside our experience as a political form. No American who was born and raised here has ever experienced what life is like in a theocracy. It
except
is
when they lived under King George, yeah.
Yes, and nobody is alive to remember that. They don't
exactly.
understand why, for example, the Islamic terrorists are what they are. They don't
mm-hmm.
understand something like Ahmadinejad or the Saudi Wahhabis, Amir Imams, or what goes on in a madrasa, like that idiot congressman who wants our schools to be more like madrasas, for heaven's sake.
Oh, of course.
yeah. If he really does want it to be like that, then resign his post in Congress and go live in Iran.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know. They're inching their way and trying to... I think people are waking up, though, Terry, so that's the good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to describe, and I know what you're saying. We don't want a theocracy. That's not what the founders intended. Hell, that's what they
no.
fought so hard to get away from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So did
the pilgrims. They got on ships.
Yep. It comes back to the idea that the topic for tonight, the idea that the group being the ideal, that your loyalty is supposed to be to a group. Whatever it is, whether it be a particular sect of a religion, like the Shia and the Sunni who kill each other over interpretations over, you know, what Muhammad said or didn't say.
Right.
When your loyalty is to a group instead of an ideal or a concept or another human being, you are very easily led into horrible acts in the name of whatever group you belong to. We have had religious wars throughout our history. We have had wars of ideology, the same thing. Ideologues, the idea that the
mm-hmm.
group, the group, this group is going to get me where I want to be. We need society has to have a group orientation as well as individuality. You can't have one without the other. But when you go too far in either direction, if you go too far in individuality direction, you have anarchy. And life isn't safe for anybody, let alone everybody. Too far in the groupthink direction, and you get the happy mushrooms in the progressive utopia. It's got to be a blend.
Agreed. That's kind of what I believe the founders were looking towards and tried to see in the people and help the people keep achieving that by more freedom. And yet they still wanted an educated, moral body politic and a civil
society. Of course
society.
They did. They understood that you can't rule yourself as a nation if you can't rule yourself as a human being. They understood that the just powers of government are derived from the consent of the government, means that the governed have to be smart enough to know what's consenting to.
Right.
It's exactly the same thing. Progressives want people to remain four-year-olds so that they are not at the age of consent. Because when you have to consciously and rationally consent to something, you have to think about its implications. You have to think about what effect it's going to have now and in future. They don't want you to think about anything.
Why they're doing to the education system so they can retard them.
Yeah. Jan Cassius has a lean and hungry look. Such men think too much, said Caesar, and he was quite correct.
Yeah.
You do not want people who think too much because they might think you out of existence or out of power.
Mm-hmm.
That's why our schools are doing everything they can to limit the students' ability to think. They want the students to have knee-jerk, true-false, multiple-choice responses. And this whole data-driven garbage, the idea that what matters most in a public school are charts and graphs and numerical pass rates and fail rates and what percentage of students in every class is special ed versus what percentage is average or above, and how many percent graduate and how many percent don't, and how many percent get punished and how many percent don't, based on ethnicity, on religiosity, they are so in love with the mechanistic numerical approach that they tend to forget that what they're dealing with are human beings, not little machine cogs that have to be chipped, molded, or stuck in the machine of body politic so they won't require they won't become a squeaky wheel and won't need any grease. It's the whole concept of progressivism, as I've said before, is the antithesis of progress. Progress doesn't come from groupthink or committees or loyalty to a political leader because he's a leader and not because he has ideas that match with your moral compass. These things don't lead to creativity, innovation, or real progress. To progress means to go forward, to head toward something. But what they're heading us toward is unmitigated Hades.
It's the Dark Ages all over again.
Mushroom utopia.
Or worse. That's what they want. And that's how they can control people. And that's how the evil ones in past histories have controlled people. There was no freedom. They had all the gold and the biggest swords and the biggest armies and the most, brawny men and hundreds of thousands of soldiers who were just as nutty as they were, the Genghis Khans, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so, these poor people were terrified.
The only difference between the progressives and any one of those characters is that the progressives want us to be happy, sirs.
I think some of them do, but I think a lot of them do not care how happy or unhappy we are. That's what I believe.
Of course they don't.
Yeah.
Of course they don't. But in general, the message is you too can be a happy serf.
Exactly. Yeah. That whole green movement. Believe me, I've read that diatribe. It makes me want to throw up. I can't read it.
We all will bow down and worship Mother Gaia and feel and be totally connected as if we don't have one of those little ponytail things to plug into a tree root, we're out of luck. Yeah. And did you see Avatar? I'm sorry, I don't have one of the long ponytail things to plug into a tree root. We do not have a sentient planet. This is not the universe of Avatar. This is good old Earth, full of individually minded, mean, nasty, delightful, and wonderful people. People.
Yeah, well, you can forget about electricity in these heat waves, because the way they're shutting down coal-fired plants is abomination, believe me.
Oh, I know.
It's ridiculous, and I'm so tired of it.
And I am, every time I see a comparison of what the object in the Oval Office said on the campaign trail and what he does and has done while he's been attending there, it's just like, why are people willing to continue to keep this man in office when everything he promised, he has done the exact opposite?
Except for making electricity skyrocket.
Yeah. Oh, well, he did promise that, but that was in an interview and not on the stump.
Yeah,
on the stump, it was all about, we can make clean coal. Well, in that case, tell the EPA to get their damn hands off it.
Oh, no, he won't do that. Of course he won't. No, because they do not want us in our cars. The reason they don't want us to have our private automobiles is because that's way too much freedom for these guys.
We can get away from it. We can get away from them. We can get away from them. Whenever you get pent up into these lovely little villages and planned communities and cities, you are totally dependent on somebody else to do everything. I have said before, if you live in the country and something goes wrong with your plumbing, chances are you're going to have to try to figure out a way to deal with it, because you're probably not going to be able to pick up the phone, call the superintendent, and raise hell if he doesn't get up there in 5 minutes.
Sure.
And you're not going to assume that it's somebody else's job to mow your lawn. And you're not going to assume it's somebody else's job to put gas in the lawnmower. But if you live in an urban environment, you are basically told every moment of your life that somebody else is responsible for the fabric of your life. Somebody else is responsible for maintaining the building you live in, the conveniences you have, the transportation you use, the street you walk on, the clothes you buy, the whatever it is. It's somebody else's job. It's never yours.
And you know what? I heard Rand Paul speaking at FreePAC a couple weeks ago, or whatever it was, when Glenn was down there in Dallas. And he said that we have a president who absolutely thinks that the roads made the business instead of the other way around, which makes him unfit for that office.
Yes.
And I love it.
It's the incredible inability to understand what it is to be an American.
Right.
The current president spent his youth outside this country. Even his early formative years, supposedly in Hawaii, that's a very different atmosphere and a very different culture from the standard average American life. His background, his mentor, his parents, his schooling until he went to college, came back here to go to college, and got foreign student aid too, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyhow, he had the obverse of a normal American childhood. Even the fact that he went around hunting out radicals to associate with, you know, that's not something that most kids do who are brought up in this country, whether, no matter what ethnicity they belong to. It's not, you know, I can't wait to go to college so I can find some radicals to hang out with. It's just, being radical and going along with what looks like it'll make your parents mad at you is typical of anybody between the ages of 13 and 25. I mean, we all did that one way or another, in lesser to greater degrees. But that's the time of groupthink. That's when you want to be group thought and group oriented. But if you actually grow up into an adult human being, you don't feel that way anymore. I always wonder, in the back of my mind, at the oh, my school is wonderful and my football team and so on and so on. Well, that's great, but my God, there are other things, you know?
Exactly.
And I'm not decrying being a fan of anything. I'm just sort of strange because I've never been a fan in the accepted world sense of the word of anything. There are some things I enjoy. There are things I like. But
you're kind of like one of those, like a little rebel inside of you in a good way. And I think a lot of us probably had that same, you know, thing maybe going in a different direction. Because
I think many conservatives do.
It's funny because, you know, my interest, once I was out of the classroom for the day, you know, in high mm-hmm. school, man, I could hardly wait to go to either dance class or go down to the theater and build sets and do a show. I mean, that was
uh-huh.
me. You know, so I was an individual in that sense. Yeah, it was just something I loved doing. So
that's one of the reasons that I don't call myself a Republican or Democrat, God forbid, or an independent. I'm more of a libertarian than I am anything, but I don't necessarily belong to the Libertarian Party either.
Right.
But and libertarians, trying to get them all on the same page is like trying to herd cats. I mean, you just can't do it. Which is one of the reasons I have seven cats. You know, they fit my personality. It's not bad to be cat-like.
Cats are cool. They don't care what you think.
No, they don't. So long as you're there when they want to be petted, they leave you alone.
Yeah.
You know, they ask you to leave them alone. And, of course, they can be quite demanding when their just worship isn't on time. They've never gotten to being
cats
God.
Cats are the masters of their human pets.
Of course. There's an old saying, dogs have masters, cats have staff.
Yeah, they do.
I have staff to seven of them. Believe me, I know that. And because I am cat-like in my orientation, I'm not really fond of anybody who tells me, come join my group and I'll make your life perfect. I don't believe it for the person.
Well, it's impossible anyway, so you know
exactly.
that.
Yeah, uh-huh, I'm smart enough to figure that out. And secondly, it makes me very nervous when somebody says, no, don't do it your way, come and do it our way because we're somehow wiser, better, and smarter than you are. Well, I'm egotistical enough to doubt that.
It goes back to, you know, the half of what you see and the none of what you hear. And when I can't even imagine the heated debate that went on in after the first Constitutional Convention was over. Can you imagine?
Oh, my God. They had, you know, the gag order that Washington imposed was a good thing because if they hadn't basically put on their honor and sworn to silence to the press, we would have had newspaper articles about incipient duels and fistfights in every session. They were volatile individual human beings, and God bless them, they gave us a country with room for volatile individual human beings. We aren't a dog pack, for heaven's sake. I certainly don't want to be part of a dog pack.
Nope.
Never have. Now, wolf pack, different. Dog pack, no. I'm much more likely to be the lone wolf than I am a pack leader, that's for sure, because I really don't want people following me. I don't like being shadowed. Let them go their own way. If it happens to go along with mine for a while, fine. But that's why I say I'm more of a libertarian than I am anything else.
I'm going to let you finish your show because I'm kind of in this middle of traffic. And thank you so much for letting me hear it on the car phone radio. And you guys,
always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. God bless everyone in the chat room and all you guys.
Take care.
Bye, my love.
Bye, sweet.
Bye.
Our friend Linda Stolz, hostess of Right from the Left Coast, that bird of paradise, a California conservative, and like the rest of us. Like the rest of us, family, she believes that it's her responsibility to do what she can to make her vision of America come true. We are all, as Americans, this nation, ladies and gentlemen, every single one of us. We all have a voice. Sometimes we can be strident, sometimes we can be angry, sometimes we can be soothing, but it's our voice. And we are encouraged, not just allowed, but encouraged to use it. Because we have guaranteed to us by our Constitution freedom of speech. Number one on the list. not the freedom of religion. We can believe and worship whatever we choose to. We can say whatever we believe, hopefully without fear of reprisal. That was what was behind the Chick-fil-A demonstrations, which weren't violent, which weren't unkind, which weren't people screaming at each other. They were people standing up for the right of any American, no matter what his business, his belief, his political ideology, to speak what he believed from his heart, whether everybody was going to agree with him or not. We have got to remember, ladies and gentlemen, that our right to freedom of speech was not put in place to protect popular speech. The reverse is true. It was reinforced by the Constitution to guarantee that unpopular speech would have as much freedom as popular speech. It was guaranteed to us, not by government giving it to us, but by our inherent nature as human beings. We have a voice and a mind, and we are expected to use both by our Creator. A benevolent Creator doesn't deliberately create flaw or evil. A benevolent Creator who has made us in his, her, its, or their image must expect that we too are created. How else could we be in the image of whoever created us? Not as groups, ladies and gentlemen, not as followers, not as sheep in the sense of can't find our way without a bellwether, but in the sense of beings that are a little lower than the angels and a little higher than the beasts, capable of great evil and capable of great good. And with the free will, and the willingness to accept the responsibilities that free will entails. I have watched kids use group as a means of avoiding responsibility for over 30 years. I have been involved in education one way or another for that long. The old, I couldn't help it. He talked to me and I couldn't finish my test. Blame everybody else. Don't take responsibility for your own choices. Don't stand up in front of God and everybody and say what you believe, because otherwise people won't like you. And what's most important is that everybody likes you and that you feel good about yourself. Even if you're a jerk and a bully and a monster and an idiot, so long as you feel good about yourself, that's what's most important. You bring it down to brass tacks when you take it down to the distillation of what's underneath all the progressive feel-good garbage that we hear. Comes back to that. We will make you happy serfs. All you have to do is give up your freedom and the responsibilities that go with it. We'll take the heavy responsibility away from you. We'll eliminate your risk. And the only way we can guarantee that we can eliminate your risk is to eliminate your choice. When you have no choice, there is no risk. And when there is no risk, there is no daring, there is no courage, there is no ability to think outside the box, imagine, create, invent, and innovate. I do not want my grandsons to live in the kind of nation that the progressive leaders in the Senate and the White House would like to make the United States. I don't want them to have to give up their freedom to fail in order to be safe as a mushroom in the progressive utopia. I don't want them to be politically correct girls. I want them to be boys, because they are boys. I want my granddaughter to be a girl, because she is one. Not because somebody says that, well, girls are supposed to do this, and boys are supposed to do that, and boys and girls are the same. Well, neither one of those viewpoints, you know, strict gender roles, all girls must do this, all boys must do that, or boys and girls are identical, they're both wrong. Men and women are different. Big news. It was a Times cover story several years ago. And we are. Men and women are different. They approach thinking and problem solving in very different ways. Tests even show that different parts of the brain are engaged in problem solving in women than are engaged when men problem solve. We don't think alike. As my father used to say, women don't think like people. And it was a perfectly logical statement from him. But neither are women necessarily fit for certain kinds of existence, careers, or jobs. Not all women. I would make the world's worst fighter pilot. Even when I was young. I don't have the physical strength. I don't have the quick reflexes. I couldn't possibly make it as a fireman. I couldn't be a fireman either. I can't carry a 200-pound man over my shoulder. I'm too small. I'm 5'4", and I weigh about 125 pounds. No, I can't lift a 200-pound person and carry him out of a burning house. I can, however, be a very, very good teacher. Okay. I'm good at that. But that doesn't say that that's what all women should be. My friend Rod says, and I can't have babies. You're right, you can't. My husband is eternally grateful to be male simply because he doesn't have to experience menses and he can't possibly have a baby. And I am thrilled for him. Believe me, not that I have ever had any babies, mainly because I really didn't want any, which of course makes me an unnatural woman to those who have very strict gender roles, as when I was young, being brought up in the Catholic Church, there are only three possible careers for women at that time: motherhood, sainthood, as a martyr, or being a nun. Well, I wasn't interested in any of the three, so I didn't quite fit in Catholic school. Which didn't surprise anybody very much who knew me. But I believe in individuality, ladies and gentlemen, real individuality. Not the fake individuality that political correctness mouths, that there is no right or wrong, there's no bad behavior, only communication we don't understand, or all societies are good if you just live within their culture. No, that's not real individuality. That's just more an expanded groupthink. Not all societies are good. Communist Russia was not good. Okay. Iran is not good. Afghanistan under the Taliban was not good for half the population. Most men I know, my friend Hottest Left is saying he doesn't want to have babies. We women can do that. I don't blame you. I didn't want to, and I'm a girl, you know. And it really wasn't the discomfort of it. It was the idea that I was going to have to be responsible for somebody for the rest of my life, other than me. You know, I could. Women have a tendency to be able to bear pain more than men, and that's not any kind of pejorative or downgrade of men. It's simply the way our nervous systems work, because we have to. You know, having a baby hurts, as a friend Rod says. And if you can't deal with the pain, the species would die out pretty doggone fast. So the biological differences, the thinking pattern differences between us as males and females are quite real and scientifically demonstrable. The differences between us as individuals, no matter what our sex, may not be scientifically measurable, but they're there and they're obvious. No two human beings think alike on every subject, not even identical twins. No two human beings are in the same mood all the time. No two human beings can have a total understanding of one another. And no two human beings have the same perception of life because their life experiences are never identical. Individuality is both a gift and a curse. Because we are individuals, we are gifted with the ability to look at things uniquely, through our own glass. The curse of individuality is that sometimes we forget everybody else is looking through their own glass as well. The groupthink mentality that is permeating and killing our public education system makes two incompatible assumptions. It accepts that people are individuals and don't necessarily all learn in the same ways, at the same pace, or with the same facility. And yet, along with that, it demands the everybody should go to college. Everybody needs to pass Algebra 1 in ninth grade. Everybody should be reading at this level in third grade. Everybody should understand fractions by the time they finish fourth grade. The two things are not compatible. You can't expect two objects to occupy the same piece of space at the same time. You can't have something be both light and dark at the same instant. You can't take a child who doesn't learn in the average way, put him in a class with kids who do learn in an average way, and tell the teacher that he or she must teach individually to a class of 25 and still meet criteria of pass-fail rates so that more than 70% of the class passes what is prescribed to be taught during the chronological period of the school year. You can't do it. It's not possible. And yet, this is what the groupthink progressive Department of Education is imposing upon our teachers and our children. The importance of integrating and inclusiveness for the special ed student. They can't be in classes where they can go along with their peers as far as the pace. No, they have to be in regular classes so they don't feel left out, so they feel like they're part of the group. Just means that they either act up or go to sleep, and don't learn anything. But they feel good about themselves, supposedly, because they're part of the group. And, of course, all the kids who are average or above just open their arms and embrace the ones who can't keep up and bend over backwards to help them and wait patiently while the teacher explains the same concept 27 times in 27 minutes. Sure they do. Not going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. Not going to happen. We have got to stop expecting utopia in public education. We can't have it there any more than we can have it in our nation as a whole. There are some kids who are not going to be able to learn sufficiently well to qualify to go to college. There are some kids who are going to learn way faster than others and be ready for college-level material by the time they're 12. And there are the vast majority in the middle who can follow the chronological pace of K through 12 education and probably manage to go to college with a C or a C plus average and have a piece of paper that says they attended that looks good on their resume. Groupthink, group orientation, Soviet style educational concepts are killing our children's future. We can stop it, ladies and gentlemen. We can get up out of the easy chair and go to PTA meetings and school board meetings and get to know the teachers in our schools and pay attention to what our kids are learning. And if they don't understand it, take the time to look it over and maybe refresh yourself on it and help them with it. And don't just throw up your hands and say, it's not my job. The teacher is supposed to teach better. Teachers don't teach in a vacuum. When your kid turns 6, you don't hand them over to the state. Unfortunately, there are a lot of folks out there who think you do. I know it's a pain in the butt to go over 7 plus 3 equals 10, carry the 1, and add the next column when you're tired from working all day. But your kid needs to have you help them. Don't blame the teacher if your child is having trouble grasping something, unless the entire class isn't grasping. And ladies and gentlemen, having been in education for as long as I have never yet seen an entire class of students in any grade not grasp a concept being taught. Maybe I've been lucky because I haven't watched incompetent teachers. The teachers I work with are dedicated professionals who care about what they do. I can't say that that's the case in every public school. We know about the infamous rubber rooms in the New York City school system. We know about people sitting around managing a stock portfolio while receiving full pay because they've been removed from the classroom. But they are relatively rare in the teaching profession, ladies and gentlemen. The numbers look large in New York because New York has a huge population. I saw a liberal commentator on Fox the other night on Hannity's show when they were talking about the shootings in Aurora, Colorado, doing her best when asked, okay, by Hannity and then again on Mancow's special, why can't I have a gun to protect myself? Her response was always, well, there isn't really more crime in the cities. It's just that we have a bigger population, and proportionally, we don't have more crime. And urban areas don't have more crime than rural areas. If you look at the 1890 court records, it was absolute bucolic byproduct. The stuff you sweep out from underneath the horse's feet in his stall. The inability to use common sense and the proclivity for mouthing mechanistic statistics that don't have any relevance to the subject under discussion is the hallmark of a progressive utopian education system that we have had thrust down our children's throats for 30 years. We as a nation, ladies and gentlemen, have always risen to the occasion. Never our individual rights and liberties have been threatened. We have stood up and said, no, you won't. Whenever anyone else is in trouble internationally, we're always the first nation to offer help. We are a generous people. We are a moral people. We know that we are not perfect, and we know that we made mistakes in the past, but we have done what it took to try to make up for those mistakes, to change our laws and change our perspectives and change our attitudes, to try to make life better for every citizen of this nation. We can and will stop the progressive steamroller, because it can only succeed if we lie down and let it run over us. We can get out of the way and come around behind it, and we can move other people out of the way of it, and we can stop the driver of it with truth. But we can't do it from the recliner or from a doze. We have to be awake, we have to be aware, we have to stand up, speak out, do what we can. We have to also join groups. Not because it's politically correct to do so or because the group makes us feel good, but because we need to show that there are more than one of us. We are the majority of Americans. Those of us who believe that the individual is the source of all progress, that individuals must be able to govern themselves as individuals before they can govern themselves as a nation. Because we believe that loyalty belongs to those whom we love and those ideals that we aspire to, not to a political party or a fearless leader or a group. Loyalty belongs to the principles upon which we were founded, and the embodiment of those principles in the men and women we choose to represent us, to make laws which protect and defend the principles. I'm hoping all of you out there listening are going to tune in to the shows that Patriot Families offer every night of the week. On Sundays, we have Frank Is Fed Up with our guest host, Ron Golden. On Monday night, Ron's show. On Tuesdays, Patriot Family Chat. On Wednesdays, Right from the Left Coast with Linda Sills. Every Thursday, Patriot Education with yours truly, Terry Rowland. On Fridays, Mortgage Help, Foreclosure Help. On Saturday, with Mr. Magic, Breaking the Illusion. And visit us in our chat room. Read some of our blogs. Put in your own writings and thoughts. Tell us what you're doing, what you see needs to be done. Give us your ideas. Give us your input. Give us your voice. Because you are the nation, ladies and gentlemen. We all are. We, as a people, as a society, as a nation, carry the responsibility to do what is right instead of what is easy. This is a lot harder than it sounds. To stand up for what you believe is right takes courage, not just the physical courage that does it when the other guy has a gun and it's pointing at you, but the moral courage when the other a finger pointed and is laughing at you. Ridicule sometimes is harder to bear and harder to stand up against than actual physical danger. But I believe in Americans, and I believe in the human spirit that we exemplify. And I believe that we can do what is right instead of what is easy. Like my libertarian friend in the chat room. We've got to see that the group, whether it be a political party or an organization to promote some specific lobby or whatever it is not you. You are part of it only because you choose to be, and only until that group does what is right and not what is easy. I believe that we will triumph, ladies and gentlemen. I believe this nation was and is and will be the greatest on earth. And I thank you all for tuning in tonight. Thanks to all my friends in the chat room. I'll be back again next Thursday. Between now and then, stand up, speak out, and vote with your feet and your actions and your wallets. Support those who believe in truth, integrity, and good government. And know we will win. Good night, everyone. Have a great evening, and God bless. Yeah. Thank you.